Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Keck. Usually, when we study history, we look back at the leaders, the icons, the heroes, to understand the times gone by. But another way to study history is to look at the ne'er-do-wells, the criminals, and, well, the jerks. Matthew Mayo is the author of Jerks in New England History. He spoke with VPR's Sage Van Wing about his new book.
So let's start off with an easy one. What exactly qualifies someone as a jerk, in your opinion?
Well, I think that they have to have done something nefarious, usually at the expense of others. And often, I found in researching this book, those others were people who were near and dear to them. Oftentimes, family members took the brunt of the jerkiness. A lot of these people were just born with malicious intentions and just continued their downward spiral from there. Some of them grew into their jerkiness or jerkhood and made great fortunes out of it, and then eventually devolved. Some of them outgrew it later on.
Is being a jerk a timeless designation, or does it depend on the context of history?
I think in a general sense, it is timeless. If you're doing something that harms other people, and especially if you are aware that you're harming somebody else, then that's pretty timeless and has gone on for as long as people have been around. And I think it will continue to be that way. We're surrounded by jerks nowadays.
So tell me about some of Vermont's biggest jerks. Let's start off with, who was Bennett Young?
Bennett Young, he was an interesting fellow because, as I mentioned before, he was one of those people who, I think at heart he wasn't a jerk. He became a jerk for a period of time, and then he outgrew it. In a nutshell, Lieutenant Bennett Young is responsible for spearheading the northernmost action of the Civil War, and it happened in downtown St. Albans. He was an eager 20-year-old soldier in the Confederate States Army, and in October 1864, with 20 of his fellow Confederate soldiers, in groups of twos and threes, they wandered on down from Canada into St. Albans, and on October 19th at 3 p.m., they assembled in St. Albans, and he climbed the steps of a hotel, and he shouted, "This city is now in the possession of the Confederate States of America." And it's really something that most people in St. Albans probably never expected to hear. And the reason they chose St. Albans is probably because St. Albans had three banks, and they robbed all those banks and stole $200,000. They made their way to Canada, and 14 were captured, but because Canada was neutral, they were freed.
So I suppose if you were on the Confederate side in that war, you would say, you know, here's a hero who was earning money for the cause, you know, not really such jerkish behavior.
Right. And the reason I ended up painting him with the jerk brush is because he caused so many people such strife for that particular day, people who never expected to be in the middle of the action. But St. Albans reconciled to the idea of it. And in 1911, when he was visiting Montreal, Bennett Young met with a group of folks from St. Albans, and they all had a cordial cup of tea at the Ritz-Carlton. So, yeah, in the end, Bennett Young was a good man, loyal to his cause, a hero to some, a scoundrel to others. I guess it all depends on which side of the war you were on.
Okay, let's move on to another of Vermont's historical jerks. Tell me about Emmeline Meeker.
Probably one of the most unpleasant people I wrote about in the book. She was just horrible. A big bullying woman. She was nearly deaf. She was the wife of a farmer near Waterbury named Horace Meeker. And on April 23rd, 1880, she sent her 19-year-old son, dim-witted Alman, he was not the sharpest knife in the drawer, to the store for strychnine, allegedly because they had a rat problem. And she mixed it with sugar water and forced a 9-year-old girl who was in her care to drink it, while Alman drove them in a buggy out of town to a swamp. And on the way, the girl started to convulse and go through all the horrible contortions that one would go through in the throes of a strychnine event. And while she was screaming, Emmeline Meeker put her big hand over the girl's mouth and helped finish her off. And then by the time they got to the swamp, the girl was dead, of course. And Alman dragged her into the swamp and stuffed her down under the water and covered her with roots and branches. After a few days, the neighbors became suspicious of the little girl's absence. The little girl was named Alice. So the sheriff was called in, and he wore down Alman's resolve. He told him where the little girl was, and the sheriff waded in there and dragged the roots and branches off and reached down in there and pulled the little girl up. And then he made Alman hold her all the way back to town while he, the sheriff, drove the buggy. And eventually they were both found guilty and sentenced to death. But just a few months before he was due to hang, Alman confessed in full, implicated his mother. But his mother never confessed. So on March 30th, 1883, after she bolted town a couple of big meals befitting her size, she was hung at the Vermont State Prison in Windsor. And that made her the first woman to be legally executed in Vermont.
And so jerk, in your mind, isn't a gendered word. You'd use it equally for men and for women?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think for some reason there are more male jerks in the world, but I think there are plenty of women who are not very nice.
So Vermont prides itself on its abolitionist history, but it turns out we also had a fairly strong eugenics movement. Tell me about Henry Perkins.
Yeah, Henry Perkins. Again, he was a lot like Bennett Young in that he had a cause that he just stridently believed in, but unfortunately it was not a good cause. From the late 1800s into the early 1900s, there was this pseudoscience known as eugenics. Basically, it's the promotion of racial purity through science. In the U.S., one of the biggest proponents of it was UVM zoology professor Dr. Henry Farnham Perkins. He considered himself an old stock Vermonter. He felt that his own research might help reduce what he considered mental deficiencies, and he wanted to cull those undesirable genetic traits that he found troubling in various groups of his fellow Vermonters. So he made great strides with the 1931 Vermont Sterilization Law. It said, in quote, a law for human betterment by voluntary sterilization.
And so which groups was he characterizing as deficient specifically?
Many, but in particular the French Canadians and Native Vermonters such as Abenaki Indians. But the Abenaki were the hardest hit of all the targeted racial groups. Many of them were forced to move from Vermont. They changed their names, adopted low-profile lives.
Do we have any numbers on how many people were affected, were forcibly sterilized?
Yeah, we had official records claim 200 to 300 cases of sterilization in Vermont. And that's a modest figure by national standards, but anecdotal evidence suggests that figure is substantially higher, perhaps in the thousands. Not a legacy to be proud of, certainly.
I guess I'd say that in my own mind, at least, Henry Perkins seems like the most jerkish of these three characters. Is that just my own bias? Or
It's possible that he is the jerkiest, because, gosh, it's just not that long ago. It seems like somebody who's that educated should know better. But yeah, so I would say he's right up there, the top of the jerk pile.
So another of the jerks that you included in your book is Mother Nature.
Yeah.
Is that really a fair characterization?
Well, probably not. But I thought it would be fun to do because so many people throughout New England have been affected by Mother Nature and her fickle ways, and will continue to be, even more so lately, it seems, than ever. And there's such, if they can be great stories, such tragic stories, such brutal stories of storms and hurricanes, just the horrible weather events, as they call them, that I felt compelled to put them in because I think, my word, it never seems to stop. So that's pretty darn jerky, in my opinion.
What's the benefit of looking at jerks at all? What do they tell us about history?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be learned from studying the scoundrels in history, not just the heroes. Why do we all like to watch murder mysteries on TV or read about serial killers, things like that? It's because we all like to flip over rocks and see the stuff that squirms underneath there, I think. I know I do. I hope that doesn't make me too jerky.
Matthew Mayo is the author of the new book, Jerks in New England History. I think I have to read that. And you can find a link to it on his website at vpr.net.